Welcome to the Wicked Wallflowers Club. I'm Sarah Hawley.
And I'm Jenny Nordback.
We are here with best-selling author Sally Thorne. We talk about her new book, 99% Mine, the pressure that comes with having a best-selling debut novel, and the perils of imposter syndrome. Without further ado, here is our interview with Sally Thorne.
We are sitting in a hotel room with Sally Thorne.
Hi, nice to be here.
We're excited. And we were discussing what question we would start with, and instead thought we would share our little thought nugget that we just had. And that's, we're in this like very Instagram hotel. Like there's chandeliers and it's very like trendy and artsy and kind of historic. Yeah. And
there's a picture of a rabbit wearing a cravat just above us.
Yes. Yes, there is. And so Sally made the comment that like, what if Barbara Cartland had had an Instagram, and she would have just like Instagrammed the shit out of like everything. And
I feel like it's her platform. Like I feel like Barbara would have lived and died for Instagram. Can you imagine it? Like her stories would just start at like 7 a.m. where she like took like a 20-yard walk around her rose garden for exercise, and she would hold her hand over a rose and take a photo of like a massive emerald ring and like done the
someone
boom.
Might take it for her, but
no, I feel like she would have too much of a control issue with that. I think Fair. She would do it all herself, and she would add a filter, and then that would be the start of her day.
Yeah.
I like to imagine.
And
I
would follow it.
Yeah, me too.
And feel shitty about her own life.
Yeah. Well, that and just like, she's so much better at this than me. Like, why do I overthink this?
I feel like Instagram at this point is sort of like a guilt thing for us, where we're like, we should post things, but it's been so long since we've posted something.
Yeah.
Do we dare?
Yeah. Is it worthy, like, to break the streak? What's the slump buster? Yeah. I don't even know when we... Yeah. Anyway, moving on. So Sally is in town from Australia, if you cannot tell from her accent. And I was just asking you if this was your first time in the States, and you said like first time since you were a kid, right?
Yeah, pretty much. My parents brought me and my brother to Disneyland. I think I was like 13 or 14.
So it's been a while since you've been here, but you are now, how long have you been awake at this point?
I'm dealing with the jet lag, it's okay. I woke up at 3 and then got back to sleep at 5 and then got up at 8. So I've had like a few chunks of time where I've been asleep, but just my stomach doesn't know what time of day it is pretty much. So I think I'll be hungry at like 4 in the morning.
Make good
choices. Don't there. You could probably find something open around here, but should you? We'll see. You can report back.
No, I am determined to get onto schedule as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Yes. So I've been having a great time so far. I love it. Everyone's been so nice, and yes, Australian accent.
Yeah.
Everyone loves it. Mm-hmm. People just like give me this like smile, like that's just like, ah, so cute. And then like, where are you from? And I'm like, Australia. And they're like, aw. So, yep.
So that was actually where I was leading with my question. And you're not going to want to answer it. But when we think of Australia, we think of like everyone has a tan and they're like not wearing very many, you know, like all in board shorts and like barbecuing.
They call each other cunt a lot.
Do they? Oh.
Don't they?
I
thought that,
that
was like a friendly thing.
No, I didn't know that.
Maybe that's wrong. I don't know anything about Australia.
But like we have these like big stereotypes where, and like everything kills you there.
Yeah.
Is another
like,
big one.
It rains spiders.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like surfing, you have Hemsworths.
Yep.
There are just like wild,
so many of
wild
them.
Hemsworths shirtless.
Everywhere. Just in the fields.
just punching kangaroos.
Climb in your windows if you don't close them. They're loose. But what is the equivalent for America?
We think Americans are really friendly and chatty, and I think of LA, I think of those really tall palm trees. That's what I think of, and the Hollywood sign, of course, and the scene in Pretty Woman where she tries to go down Rodeo Drive and it's a big mistake.
Huge,
I haven't had that
mistake.
Moment yet. And I mean, I've heard like the traffic in LA is like worldwide legendary. pretty bad. Yeah, I've seen a little of that so far. Freeways, everything, basically the whole movie Clueless.
Yeah, everything
in LA takes 20 minutes.
Oh, except for that one.
That's what my life looks like.
20 minutes about and you, we all Sarah. Wear beautiful plaid.
Fast food. I went into the 7-Eleven at the airport and I was like, I was surprised. I was like, what is all of this? There was like a case that had like all of these like breakfast burritos, and there was like a machine that like cheese came out of.
No, I'm scared to ask if you ate the 7-Eleven cheese. You didn't eat the 7-Eleven cheese,
and there
did
was
you?
Like a thing like where you could grab a hot dog, and all of the chips were like these insane flavors, and everything was like, I think just there's like lots of flavors. I was like, in the end I got a banana and a bottle of water because I was just so intimidated. I was just like, can't do it. I can't do it.
They called each other and they were like, someone got a banana. Yeah. Someone finally ate one.
I know.
They justify 9 years of no one buying bananas.
Yep, it was me. I bought it.
I just think that's funny. You come to America and you go to the 7-Eleven immediately. Like, that is not a premium destination right there.
But hey, if you've just gotten through customs and
I was desperate.
You need a snack
after 2 hours
drink.
In customs, I needed that banana.
Yeah.
I think our listeners would probably just like to hear you say banana again.
No, right. Banana. Oh, God.
We like it. It's good.
We do. Americans, we are infatuated with accents.
Yeah.
Which I was living abroad in England for a couple of years, and it actually did kind of go the other way around sometimes. Hmm. And I felt like so special because I just know how excited I get when people have accents. Yeah. And I was like, someone likes this.
Yeah. I feel like when I go back to my hometown in Scotland, it's so far-fetched that anyone from America would visit there that they just think I have like a speech impediment or something. Like, they get really confused for a while, and then they're finally like, wait, are you American? But we've been talking for like 20 minutes, so that it took them that long to figure it out is like, oh, okay, what did you think was going on? And then the next question is always like, what are you doing here? It's not a town people visit. But
yeah, so welcome. Yeah. Welcome to America.
Thank you.
We are glad that we are one of the destinations after the 7-Eleven. I think that's the appropriate order to put us in.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this is your first like big book tour, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've done two signings before in Australia, one in Sydney and one in Melbourne, sort of close to when The Hating Game came out. And apart from that, I haven't signed anything. It's a pretty rare signature. So I'm hoping people will come out to the events and get that rare signature.
Yeah.
Because it's a long plane ride, so I hope that you guys all make advantage. It worth my while.
Totally. Do you, like, if you've only signed a couple of times, do you have your, like, little catchphrase figured out yet for the book?
Is there a catchphrase?
Authors, they've all got like some, like Cara Marie Monning does, like keep the lights, stay the lights. Or like there's, Sierra Simone had a good one. It was something about sinning. I was like, ooh, that's good. And I have always felt like weird pressure because I can't come up with a really witty one. And I'm like, what do I sign? And then I end up writing like four sentences. And they're like, you're not supposed to write a letter in the front of the book.
Okay, well, you've just like really touched on like one of my main fears about first signing tomorrow. I don't know what I'm going to write, especially in the front of 99% Mine. I don't know. Feels pretty lame to just put like happy reading. So can we brainstorm?
Yeah.
Like,
okay, my suggestion is this book is now 100% yours.
Love it. Can you top it?
Oh, no, this is way more a Sarah thing.
Or you could say, my heart is 100% yours or something if you wanted to be very affectionate.
I 100% love you.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are 100% friends.
Yeah. 100%.
I'm 100% jet lagged.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, I mean, I think happy reading works, but if you can make it book specific, it's cute, but that's hard. I don't know how they...
I did write in the in The Hating Game, I used to write like flamethrower kisses in the front.
Ooh, that's good.
That was the best I could do. Like my creativity goes just so far.
I feel like you could do that in 99% Mine because your fan group is the flamethrowers. Mm. So they've kind of assumed that identity. So I think you could get away with it and they'd be excited.
I kind of wish you would have actually kissed the pages as your signature.
Like, that's very Dame Barbara Cotland.
Totally.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
She would, wouldn't she?
Oh, yeah.
She would.
Can you imagine on top of just like signing everything, having to like reapply your lips? Hold, please.
I think I would get like a stamp made in the shape of my lips, which is also maybe Barbara Cartland.
Yeah, yeah. I think you might have some aspirations there. Yeah.
Yeah. So does this feel like a lot of pressure? Like, obviously the Hating Game was immediately this... Well, I don't know how immediate it felt for you, yeah, but it's a huge success.
That was where I was going, and that's maybe a good thing to touch on. I don't think it wasn't like immediately successful, right? Like right out of the gates? Was it kind of a word of mouth, slow burn?
Yeah, it was definitely just a word of mouth sort of snowball taking off, and then it just picked up steam. And it's still selling really, really well even today. And it was out in 2016. So I don't know. People are still finding it and recommending it to people. And it's like people tell me, you know, I made my hairdresser get this book. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think I was lucky in that it's the kind of book that you can like recommend like your sister and your hairdresser. And that's what... people have been telling me they do.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
We see it recommended all the time.
I just recommended it to someone this week.
Yeah.
Because they wanted enemies to lovers and banter. So do you feel pressure with 99% Mine now? Having that as your benchmark is being like, wow, my first book is such a success. Is it terrifying to have a second book out? Or do you feel like you've already gone through like the extremes of emotion with the first one?
Short answer, yes. So much pressure. Full stop. I didn't intend to even write a book. The Hating Game was not written to be published.
Oh,
I did.
Let's talk about that. Yeah.
So the Hating Game, I wrote it as a gift for a friend for her birthday.
What?
She said to me,
Sarah, I want better birthday gifts.
Oh my God, yeah.
Maybe I'm just like an overly intense friend.
100%. Yeah, when she says 100%, she is not fucking around.
This is a friend who'd like really encouraged my writing back from like my fan fiction days when I used to write fan fiction. And I said, what can I get you for your birthday? And she said, why don't you write me a short story? And I said, well, can you give me like a prompt word? You know, that was kind of the thing back in fan fiction days, you know, like competitions often had like a prompt word that you had to kind of jump off from. And she said, nemesis. And I like immediately pictured like two people just in like a silent office, like sitting opposite each other, just hating each other. And I ended up, it just started coming out and it went past the short story word count and it kept going. And I was working full time. I was kind of hating my life a little, but whenever I felt like it and with her birthday as the deadline, I just kept writing what turned out to be the first draft of The Hating Game. And so I gave it to her for her birthday and she was like, what? and she finished it and she was like, I loved this so much. What are you going to do with it? And I was like, what do you mean? Like, you've got the present now. And I enjoyed like editing it in my own time. And it got to a point where it was as good as I could get it myself. I mean, I probably wrote the first draft in, I want to say like 6 weeks. And then I took like a year and a half of just like, why am I even doing this? Just because I like this story and it's amusing me and no one's watching. Tinkered away with it until you're probably the next segue question is therefore, how did it get out of your computer and into someone else's computer? I've been friends with Christina and Lauren, Lauren Billings and Christina Hobbs, who write together as Christina Lauren. I don't even think I need to say that anymore. I could probably just say CeeLo and everyone would know exactly who I mean. I knew those guys back when we all wrote fan fiction.
Oh.
I knew them way, way back. Like I was walking to work and getting email update that The Office had just updated, like back before it became Beautiful Bastard.
Yeah.
Like that's how far back. So like, yeah, long time fan of them. And they'd always said to me, like, if you ever write anything, we'll read it. They'd, you know, got into their publishing exciting journey. And I was like, oh, well, I kind of finished this. And they started to read it and they're like, oh, this is really good. I was like, oh, thanks. And they said, oh, can we show it to our agent? And I was like, ah, yeah, sure. Like, whatever. Like, nothing will ever come of this. And then I got an email like a week and a half later or so from my agent, who is now my agent, Taylor Haggerty. And she was like, are you considering any other agents at the moment? Because I really love this and I'd love to represent you. And like, I was trying to like be really cool. Like, no, I'm not talking to anyone else at the moment. And yeah, so suddenly I had an agent. And then she said, I'm going to put it out to this list of publishers. And I looked at the list. I didn't know much about anything, but I knew that those were the big ones. I was like, poor Taylor, this will be a fruitless endeavor, but perhaps I'll get some sort of like feedback in the responses. And I had like a 2-book deal with HarperCollins like in less than a week.
Wow. That is so fast.
So fast. I was like, what? I thought it was all an elaborate practical joke. And so people often ask me, you know, like, how do I get an agent? I'm like, I really don't know.
No idea.
How do I like, you know, how do I get a book published? And I'm like, I'm really not the best person to ask about this. So looping back to your question, do I feel pressure? I felt a lot of pressure because the first time around, it was so easy. It was not hard at all. It was like I had like tossed, I was at the end of a basketball court and I was just walking through this basketball court and I see a basketball on the ground and I pick it up. I swing it over my head and it goes through the hoop. And someone was nearby and they go, oh my God, that was amazing. You are so good at that. Can I get a bunch of people? Let's do this again. We'll do it in a week. We'll get a bunch of people and you'll do it again. Like,
we'll fill a stadium.
You'll do it again. We'll
and we'll all watch.
And we'll watch it. And I just like completely dried up. Like I was, when you are currently experiencing something successful, while you are simultaneously working on your next thing that is going very poorly, It's really hard to enjoy the success because you're like, no, you all have this very wrong. I'm not doing this well. it's been hard. So I had some writer's block for well over a year. I wrote the first draft of a book that they wanted the first draft within, I think, 4 months. And so, as a person I've just explained, I've never written a book intentionally. I was like, okay, let's do this. So I wrote a draft of a book that was not good and I kept trying to make it good and they kept letting me know very nicely that it just wasn't working. And eventually I said, look, let's just put that one in the bin. Can I start again? And they said, yes. Mm. And all the while people are saying, where's your next book? Where's your next book? Oh. Including like family barbecues. And oh, no. And like that is a question that I've gotten a lot. Like, you know, how are you dealing with the pressure? Mm. And the answer is I did not deal well with it at all.
Yeah.
And it was really the title, 99% Mine. Like once I came up with that title, it was just like popped into my head randomly. And it just re-sparked everything for me. And I was able to... It was like the magic phrase. And every time I thought about like, oh, I just want to quit this, I just felt like I loved that title so much that I just wanted to give it a little more. And so I think I would describe the whole experience as like the first time around, I was really surprised that I wrote a book. And the second time around, I know that I wrote a book because it was the hardest thing I've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I recommend your books when people ask, like, what is voice? Where, you know, people talk about what a distinct voice or agents or publishers want something voicey. I tend to point to you as a really good example because you do have a very unique voice for romance, just very bitingly witty, a lot of unusual comparisons. Like, one of my favorite lines is in The Hating Game when she's like, oh, I'm eyeing his rib cage like some kind of like meat eating like predator. And I was like, it's just like really funny, interesting wry observations. And I wonder how much of that is because you never did set out to actually like have like a writing career. And so you just started writing from the place that felt like the voice that was authentic to you.
Mm.
Was your fan fiction voice similar? Like you tended to write witty
Was it Twilight fan fiction?
It was
as well?
Twilight okay. fan fiction, and yes, it is still online.
Find your username.
Yeah, we'll get CeeLo to give it to us tomorrow.
I just joined AO3 and started my own fan fiction thing. I'm like, I want to hunt it down.
It's on fanfiction.net, okay. And it's called The Blessing and the Curse, and it's like 120,000 word. Really angsty Twilight fanfic. It was like kind of embarrassing for a few years for me to admit. I don't know why. Because I honestly love fanfiction so much, but
so many big careers have been started by it that it's fully socially acceptable to be like, yeah, I started in Twilight fanfic. Like,
if I look at the time that I was writing, when we were writing, like the number of big names that came out of that pool is just incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, like CeeLo, E.L. James, Helena Hunting, you know, like I can like
isn't Anna Todd another one, or am I crazy?
S.L. Scott. Yeah, I mean, I can't think of heaps off the top of my head because I'm jet lagged.
Yeah,
but
you don't
it's
even like yeah,
there
once
were
we go
so
down
many
hole.
Good writers, and it really trains you to I mean, I personally can't believe now that I used to write fiction and then publish it on the internet asking strangers to like leave me a review. Now I'm not, I would crumble under those circumstances now, but it was really normal. And I think we all learned really fast what readers wanted, and the readers want intensity. They want those characters together all of the time. They want, that feeling of connection and like heaps of kissing. And if you wrote like a lemon scene, that's what we used to call a sex scene. We used to call it a lemon.
Oh, I've been trying to figure that out.
Yeah, a lemon is a sex scene. So they would always get you a lot of reviews. And you would also try to end your chapter kind of on a little bit of a hooky cliffhanger. And you would just get a review that just says more, please. And that's all it would say. So I think maybe that was like a really good sort of boot camp. CeeLo yeah. call it the Twilight boot camp, because you learn like what people really love. And in terms of like the voice aspect of it, I think people like I was truly surprised when people started telling me The Hating Game was funny, because to me it wasn't. It's not funny. That's just like how I think, and like it's just me, like that's how I think and observe the world. And so I think it's a really good message to anyone that wants to write a book, like please do not try to sound like anyone else, because you are you, and only you can tell your story the way you want to. And when I wrote The Hating Game, for starters, I was not trying to write it, and it was also a time when rom-coms were not, I don't think they were particularly hot. I think that all the books at that time were like black with red on the cover, pretty sexy, pretty vampire-y. And so I wasn't trying to like hit the next big upswing in genre whatsoever. And I was just really lucky that it was right at that moment that people started to want something that was like a comfort read and something that was sweet.
I don't know that you give yourself enough credit. I think it probably contributed to this wave of rom-coms that we're looking for. Like I think everything I see now is like, it's the next Hating Game.
Yeah.
It's
and like the
Hating Game meets whatever. Yeah. Like
a lot of blue and yellow I'm seeing, which is nice. Well, thank you for saying that. And my agent has been telling me that too. But yeah, imposter syndrome is still like impossible for me to.
It's brutal.
it's brutal. I wish I could fully enjoy it and just own it. And if like and say, yeah, I was like a big part of this all changing and all of these gorgeous covers and all of these new authors coming in, but I just feel like I was just part of like
but it's hard as women, like we want to be like own it, but if you did own it, then it's like, oh,
I know,
you know, she's
did you hear how close I got then?
No,
I like
I
got
was
so close then.
I thought it was
dear
good.
Listener, I got so close to just going yeah, hell yeah, and then I was like no.
Just kidding. With no, I have completely forgotten what I was going to say. I'm sure it was very clever.
Well, then I guess I will ask. I know coming from the fan fiction world, romance is important. Were you a big romance reader before that?
Yeah, I was like a chronic romance novel stealer. When I used to go over to my grandmother's place, they had this big bookcase that lined a whole hallway, and it just had all these random books. I don't even know where they came from. Just like people would in the family would read them and then just put them back on the shelf. And there was heaps of what you guys call Harlequin. In Australia, we call them Mills and Boone. And I was just like totally obsessed with stealing them. They were like a nice skinny little book, you know, usually with like a red cover. Like I think at the time they were like all illustrated covers with like a guy with his shirt kind of like unbuttoned and like slipping off the shoulder. And the lady would be in like some sort of crushed satin gown that was like really low cut. And I mean, it was just like catnip to me. And I really loved how these stories just went through this character arc in a quick and timely way that kept you hooked. And I was obsessed. I was always stealing them, reading them. And also there was a range of books in the 80s. I think they were called Sweet Dreams. And they were also, they belonged to my cousin Joanna. And so she had all of these Sweet Dreams novels. And I would, they were like little standalone romance, like teenage aged characters. Mm-hmm. And yeah, totally ate those up. So I think before I'd even started writing fan fiction, I'd kind of been like marinating my brain for years mm-hmm. in like every trope imaginable. And, you know, I'd read it all by that point. And I think I knew what I liked. And what I like reading the most is two people in a room and there's like lots of staring and eyes and hearts, and that's pretty much all I know how to do. So, yeah.
But it's well, good.
Yeah. And we really like it. So yeah. Now my thought that I lost before was related to that second book. And first of all, how many people have told us the second book is just brutal. And I think it is what you described, that the first book you have that it's liberating in the sense that you're sitting there going, no one's going to read this. So you're writing it for yourself or for your friend, or there's just like no pressure on it. And then if it's successful, even if it's not, but in your case, it's massively successful. And now people are like clamoring for the next one. It's you then got the weight of all of those people as you're writing, and like finding a way to kind of liberate yourself from that must be challenging. And I wonder if it'll get easier as you go, you know, as it stops being one compared to another, you know, it's like two compared to one, and it gets just more like this book works for these people and this book works for other people. And it's less, because I felt that pressure even as like a reviewer or someone talking about books, like we were talking about Alexa Martin's sophomore book. And I was like, I wanted to say I liked this better than her first, but that feels so personal. Like you're saying it is, I thought it was better, but that feels like I'm saying the first one is bad because there are only two for that comparison.
And I guarantee someone else is going to say, I like the first one better.
Right. Because it is so I bet it's just personal. That like two books is so much pressure because it is the first one that you're writing with any expectation. And then there has to be a comparison because you only have one to compare it to. So hopefully it gets less of that as you keep going. But then, no, my brain's not working tonight. That was leading somewhere.
I really do you know the artist Lorde?
Yeah.
And she had that smash first album and she was like 16. Mm-hmm. And she was like a worldwide phenomenon. And then her second album came out and I completely admit that I took one listen to that album and I thought, nope, not for me. Looking back on it, I just wanted something so similar to that first album that gave me those feelings and had those songs that were just going to be like my instant classics. And then I returned to that album eventually and I listened to it and I thought, oh my God, like how did I not hear when I first listened to this, how complex and how much work went into this. And it actually to me is become my favorite more than the first album. So I just tried to, towards the end there, especially towards publication day, I just tried to tell myself, like, this is your second album. A lot of second albums don't do that great because people are like, but I've been listening to this first album in my car for like 2 years.
Right.
And this isn't that. So I, you know, that is a comment that I've been getting a lot for 99% Mine. Like, this isn't the Hating Game. I'm like, yeah, I do know that. It Sure it isn't.
A different
and yet, if it was the Hating Game, everyone would be like, oh, well, this is formulaic. And she hasn't taken any risks. And like, you were fucked no matter what you wrote.
I think no matter what I did, it wasn't going to be enough for everyone. Penny Reid told me that the second book is your chance to tell readers what to expect from you in terms of, are you always going to be pretty much the same flavor, or are you going to serve up something really different each time? And I knew that I wanted to do something really different. And I honestly couldn't replicate the circumstances of the first book. Mm-hmm. People at barbecues would say to me, just pretend like you're writing the first one and just pretend that like no one's waiting to read it. But you can't. You can't go back.
It's not helpful. You can't just magically make the people go away.
Imagine awkward.
But I like that they are having barbecues in Australia. Yeah. It's a thing.
Yeah. No, I assume these are people not in the publishing industry.
No. Okay. Yeah. People with no experience whatsoever in this.
It's ever since I got an agent, people are like, oh, I hear you got a book coming out. And I'm like, well, that's a little hasty.
I do. Totally. Just roll with it.
They just want to support you. They want to be so excited.
Yeah, so I just really hope, and I've asked people, you know, when the book came out, just please just treat it like its own unique thing. You know, who knows, maybe if the order had been reversed, maybe if 99% Mine had come out first, The Hating Game, people might say, this is so fluffy and doesn't have the same angst and intensity of 99% Mine. Like, you just can't know. And to a certain extent, I just have to say to myself, I did my job and I finished the book and everyone got the book. And I really hope that people enjoyed it. Or if they were like me listening to the Second Lord album and were like, I hope that maybe they can return to it in like a year and try again. And, you know, it might actually hit the spot
when they're not expecting it to be the Hating Game, like when they've let go of that expectation a little bit. I can totally see that. I think it's one of those books that for the people it is working for, it's working for really intensely, like tears, and it's cathartic, and it's like what they needed to read. So I think in that sense you should definitely feel like you did your job. Like, people who are too caught up in that comparison, that's one thing. But I think the people who are saying that they loved it are like
really
deeply, deeply moved by it and like really, really love it. And that's as much as you can do as an author. Better that than everyone kind of likes it a little bit, but like forgets it completely. So
I really like Darksea as a heroine because she is kind of a mess. I really enjoyed seeing her on the page. Mm-hmm. She didn't feel like...
Well, so let's stop assuming everyone knows what it's about and do that thing where we tell them what it's about. Can you give us like, how would you describe 99% Mine?
Okay, I'll try to do it in sort of like a Twitter style sound grab. Okay. A girl called Darcy and her twin brother inherit a cottage which they need to renovate. They ask Jamie's best friend to come and renovate it, and Darcy can't stop sweating every time he's in the same room as her. And
she's real thirsty in this book.
Spends the entire book trying to basically not leap on him and climb him like a tree, because to him, he is the world's most perfect man and no one has ever measured up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I do.
And it's good. Yeah. Yeah. I think isn't there a line where she's like, all right, get in me. And he's like, oh my God. Like, she is just so funny.
Yeah. Not a lot of a filter, but for sure.
And she's been kind of drifting a little adrift in her life. Mm. And so the renovation project has a chance to reconnect both to her past and her legacy, and then also reconnect with sort of the boy next door that she always felt like her twin had precedence over her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea is that she feels like Tom belongs to everybody else. She was sort of mentally trying to tally up, you know, he's such a perfect person. Everybody has a piece of him. I wonder what percentage of him is mine. You know, even his dentist, even his doctor wants a piece of this person. He's so good. I think I probably have 1% of him. Mm-hmm. And the next day she decides, maybe I'll try to make him 2% mine. And I just, that was like the title just really kept me going in the project. And I mean, if I'm honest with you, like I really did come close to not even having a second book. I was to the point where, would it be better to just have one really awesome book and just be like a one-hit wonder? Should I just like tell Harper, look, I can't do it? I came close like a couple of times, but I just kept pushing through because I just love that title and I just wanted to see if I could do it again. So yeah, it was very, very close to not being a book at all.
But it is interesting that Darcy's very tenacious in her pursuit of Tom, and you had to be tenacious as well in terms of committing to this and not just saying, look, it would be easier, you know, maybe it would have been easier for Darcy to like keep being a bartender or wherever and kind of floating around. Maybe it would have been easier to say, well, I don't know about easier, but to say this project is really, really freaking hard and like, do I actually want to do it? But you ended up persevering.
Yeah. Yeah. She was like, a character that really, she did get me through, you know, because she was like a really no shit kind of character. And it was my first drafts of trying to write a character like that were just terrible because I noticed that all my dialogue was like, everything was a question, like had a question mark at the end of it. Or she was, the voice was so passive and I just have to keep redrafting it. Saying like this person would never just ask a question. She would just make a statement. And I've always wanted to be like that tough chick. Like my confession is like, I've always wanted to be bad Sandy in Grease at the end of Grease. When I watched Grease continuously for like 5 years when I was a kid, and I'm talking continuously, but I've always been more of like the Sandra Dee character. Mm-hmm. And so this was my big chance to like really go for it and like kind of live in those shoes. And yeah, she's pretty tough and, you know, people might find her really unlikable, but I don't think she would care, to be honest.
I want more unlikable heroines. We've been talking about this a lot in various places. I think Scarlett Peckham had an actual social media graphic that was like, this is the worst heroine I've ever encountered. And she was actually claiming it. Like, I think it's good to, if people think she's unlikable, it means there's something distinct about her. And honestly, like, people kind of hate on women a lot anyway for having personalities outside of the norm or for stepping out of what's expected of them. So bring it on. I didn't find her unlikable at all. I found her very cool.
How are you feeling about publishing now and like two books out? Do you feel like you have more in you? Is it just too brutal trying to put those stories out? I mean, I think it would also be interesting before you give an answer to evaluate this now and then in a few weeks when you've realized how excited people are about your books.
Well, I've been in Australia completely undisturbed for a couple of years. I mean, everything that's happened to me has happened to me on the internet pretty much. So I don't really know what's in store for me over the next couple of weeks. It'll be great to meet people in person. And you know what? Like, I know that there's going to be an awful lot of blue books in the line. I understand that. Like, I know that people haven't had a chance to tell me in person that they loved The Hating Game. You know, I get, you know, one of the most amazing things someone ever told me was that, like, this lady had a really stressful job, but she'd keep a copy of The Hating Game in her drawer. And, like, when things, like, got so bad, she would just, like, open it and just, like, read a random bit and then just, like, be able to keep going. So it's, like, things like that that make you realize that, yes, there is someone, a real person out there reading it instead of just sending it out into the internet. So yeah, I'm looking forward to like actually giving some people some hugs and actually signing a real page for once. It's going to be like quite meaningful for me. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I don't know what to expect.
And I guess you've sort of avoided the question of like next book.
Oh,
I don't
sorry.
Know that you've deliberately avoided it.
I
should let it slide.
You don't have to answer it.
Yeah, you don't have to answer it, but no, I don't know good. If you got that. That's what I was asking.
Oh, so. Sure. No, my jet lag brain was trying. I was staring at the rabbit picture that is above.
Yeah, it's quite distracting.
These two guys are sitting on this stripy couch and there is this rabbit, as you said, wearing a cravat, looking very Mr. Darcy. And I was looking at the rabbit and I was thinking, what are you talking about? There's some part that you've missed here. But the actual question, I'm glad you guys are keeping track of this. So the answer is, yes, I have more in me. Harper gave me another 2-book deal. So there will be 4 books by me. And I finished the first draft of book 3. And it came out really nice and easy. I mean,
good.
Yeah, I know.
So it really was just the curse of the second book.
Yeah, the second book almost universally is the killer. Unless somehow you've managed to write the first book and then write the second book before the first one is published. And then in that case, your third book will be your worst book ever.
No matter what, there's going to be a really bad book in there. Yes. Or not like bad, but a bad experience.
Yeah.
So. I mean, I remember Lenora Bell talking about the second book just being, or there's been so many people just the second book brutally like awful. And once they get it out, I think, well, I'm so glad to hear that the third one came out more easily. Can you tell us anything about it, or are you not ready to do that yet?
It's a bit too early at this point, because I kind of don't really tell anyone, not even my mom or my aunties when they ask me, because I think like as soon as I start to talk about it, if someone then replied, oh, I've read a book like that, blah, I would immediately be like, okay, just scrap that. But it will be exactly what you hope is like on brand for Sally Thorne. So it's like really cute and weird, and it's like a little bit sad, and it's like happy, and it's a little bit lonely, and there's like little quirky bits. But I'm just so relieved that I managed to just quite effortlessly, I mean, it took me 5 months, which is like not as fast as some people, but for me it was pretty quick, managing to just get that first draft out. And I'm now letting it sit away for a while, just leave it, and then I'll, once I get back to Australia, I'll take a look and start to layer on top of it. It's very much like, it's like you've just grabbed a piece of paper and you've just like used a pencil just to sketch out, this is the shape of what I'm going to make for you. And then you go in, like for me, the editing part is where it all just starts to happen, just layer after layer of just mainly like staring and eyes, like, staring and eyes.
Staring and eyes.
Yeah, that's the working title. Yeah, essentially. And I'm just like so lucky that like a team like at HarperCollins, they're like there for it. They're like really, like it's pretty hard to submit a draft. Like you're like, what about this? And it, all it is just people like kissing and wanting to kiss. And they're like, great, more of that.
That's better than Dorinda Jones told us that one of her drafts, she got out so fast that she hadn't written the sex scenes yet. She'd been saving that for last. So it just said like TK sex scene here.
Yeah.
And they were like, this is a big thing to be missing.
Okay, well, my draft is so drafty that the guy doesn't have an eye color. And the main character doesn't have a last name. Ooh. So,
I mean, names are the hardest part about writing.
Names are bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. And who needs eyes?
You think you've got it. And then,
maybe he's a rabbit.
Maybe he is a rabbit.
Maybe.
What color are the rabbit's eyes?
Yeah. Black. Brown. Black.
Very. There's like
a, this is your next hero.
Maybe we'll attach a picture of this rabbit that we keep talking about.
Oh, we will.
Yeah, no question.
Now I want you to write like a like Harvey style like giant rabbit. I've never seen, you know, Harvey about the man who befriends the invisible bunny.
No.
Anyway,
Donnie Darko.
Well, there's no. It's that, but like. Cuter.
Is this a movie or a book?
It's a movie.
Okay.
No, and everyone thinks this guy is crazy because he's like, yeah, it's my friend Harvey and he's a giant rabbit.
I'm thinking of the sex doll
but now
movie
I want...
with the...
What?
No, what's... Who's there was the no, notebook there actor was no guy?
Sex. Ryan Gosling. Oh, Lars and the Real Girl.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Like, thinks that...
No, but this rabbit's invisible, but I've never seen that as a romance conceit. So now that plot is free to you, the giant bunny...
A plot bunny, if you will. Oh, dear. Okay, you're
very right that it's hard to come up with names, by the way.
Yeah. Oh. Well, and you think you've got it, and then you realize it's like identical to, or too similar to something else that's in the book, and it doesn't work.
Man, the things that change the most in my drafts are names. Like, I'll be on like draft 8 or something, and someone will point out that I've accidentally named someone the same name as like my country. Whoops.
I don't know if other people have done this, but I know when I had my manuscript out to my publisher, it had to go through a legal read because it was based on fact, and like we had to make sure we had all legal bases covered. So we changed a name an extra time just for the sake of changing it. So we changed, I think, Tim to Wes. And I just did like a find all, like find and replace all of Tim to like W-E-S. And that meant everywhere time was in there, it became like wheeze. So and there were a couple of others that were just like ridiculous, where like these things had been words at one point, and the copy editor was like, what does this mean? Like, what is this wheeze word? And I was like, oh, it's, I did find, like, replace all. I'm sorry, I'm an idiot. Like, thank you for catching it. So yeah, if you're going to change names, make sure you don't do the replace all unless it's not going to be part of a word. But all right, we're going to do our rapid fire questions now. And
it's not like a rapid does not mean we're timing you. It's not like, yeah, it's not like, oh, answer quick or we throw you out the window.
Someone please come up with a better name. They're just random questions to like get to know you better.
Things we want to know.
Okay. And they can be long or short answers and there's no wrong answer.
Okay.
The first one is, what is the strangest or most interesting object that's in your workspace?
This is really rapid fire answering, isn't it?
Set the tone.
I think the most interesting object in my workspace will always be my pug Delia.
Oh.
Yeah, so she's...
You've got horses too, yeah?
Right? Yeah, I've got a horse as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and okay, you have a haunted dollhouse too, which I feel like I was going to ask you about. Can you tell me about the haunted dollhouse now?
Yeah.
Okay, so I bought a dollhouse on a whim, which is, in retrospect, it was very... silly decision, because to get a dollhouse custom made, we are talking serious money. And I'd found out randomly that there was a guy in my suburb who's like one of Australia's best dollhouse makers. Mm-hmm. And I was like tickled by that. I was like, oh, I always wanted a dollhouse when I was a child. So I went to see his workshop and I ended up like commissioning like a Victorian Gothic mansion.
Yes.
And it took him nearly 2 years to make and nearly 2 years for me to pay for it. Wow. I'm not telling you how much it was. The windows had to like be imported from Scotland because like teeny tiny little arched windows. It's got like a little mouse hole with a mouse in it. It's all lit all throughout.
This is what should be on your Instagram.
Yeah, people ask me all the time, could I do like a tiny tour?
Yeah.
Is it actually haunted or do you have little ghost figures in it?
I think that it's definitely haunted. If you saw it, you'd know that for sure, that it's got tiny ghosts in it, little mouse ghosts. Yeah. So maybe that's my answer. Yeah, my dollhouse. I changed my answer.
Okay.
Excellent.
Great. Is there anything you irrationally hate?
Snails.
Oh,
that's an interesting one.
Why specifically snails?
I think my earliest memory is touching a slug underneath a log when I was in preschool. And it's my first memory of total revulsion. So maybe it's not irrational then. Maybe that's like my ultimate fear, snails.
Mm. Oh, well, that's going to be a later question.
We'll skip that question now.
Okay.
Who is the best villain ever? It can be the first one that comes to your mind because that makes them the most memorable.
Darth Vader.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
Good answer. Good legit answer.
What is the last book that kept you up reading?
Fix Her Up by Tessa Bailey. Mm-hmm. I have an advanced copy of that and it is so good, guys. Like, so good. It comes out in June.
Is it? Yeah, I've got it too, but I haven't picked it up yet. It's like, is it home repair or like home, are they flipping houses? Is that the premise?
Yeah. And we're doing an event together in Long Island. I guess the books kind of tie together because 99% Mine has a renovation aspect. Mm-hmm. It does. It's based on one character that does flip houses.
I'm going to ask this next question, but I feel like people always, isn't she the one people point to as being really good at dirty talk?
Whew, yeah.
They're good. Yeah.
Holy moly. Like the kind where if you think about it later, like your tummy does like a little flip.
Oh. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, she sets it up.
She's been sitting in my TBR
The cover doesn't really, like the cover for Fix Her Up is so cute. It's one of the lovely bright cartoon covers, but it's hot as hell.
Okay, if I was going to use an object to summon you with a spell, what would it be?
A tea bag.
Oh.
If we can find them.
Yep.
We had a discussion about how Americans, especially like Americans in a restaurant, they get really like overwhelmed when you order tea and they like don't know
They think like, that one is in one type is interchangeable with another.
Yeah, yeah. Like any kind of tea is tea. So like you want breakfast tea, but you get Earl Grey. And do you actually argue with it or do you just drink Earl Grey?
I don't know if I would have been able to tell the difference.
See? Oh, no.
I'm a heathen.
Oh, no.
I'm a horrible heathen. Yeah, well, I drink my tea with a tea bag in the cup the whole time. Chris thinks I'm a monster.
I could
because he sets a timer to steep his tea the perfect amount of time.
So like my Chris.
Oh my gosh.
What? He'll always be like, did you set the timer? And I'm like, no.
What factory did they make these guys in? Like they're all coiling their cables.
Yeah, and, like, they're cable fascists. Timing their... who, like the cable must be rolled a certain way. And I hope he's not listening. He knows. He knows.
He knows what he is. Okay. We are going to play you know the game Fuck, Marry, Kill?
Mm-hmm.
So we used to do that with men. We are done with men. We're doing women now, and we're not going to kill any of them. So we're going to play Fuck, Marry, Burn Down the Patriarchy. So you're going to marry one, you're going to have some hot sex with one, and you are going to go on a rage-filled anti-patriarchy bender with one.
Sure.
And your options are Beyonce, Cate Blanchett, and Lucy Liu.
I'd marry Beyonce.
Hmm.
I would burn down the patriarchy with Cate Blanchett, and I'm sorry, but I'd have to kill Lucy Liu.
Oh no, she's not dead.
She's not dead. Okay, she's not what's dead. The other option?
We're you're not gonna fuck her.
Any of them. Yeah, it sounds like you're fucking Lucy Liu.
Yeah, you and me.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Let's.
You can we'll live go, with that.
You can live,
yeah,
with,
live yeah. with that. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's fine.
What is a movie that you would watch every day?
Well, if it was me talking as a kid, it would be Grease.
Yeah, I was gonna say you gave us this answer actually.
But as an adult, probably, I just watch The Goonies.
Mm. Mm. That's a good one. Who is someone you really professionally look up to?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. Christina and Lauren are like my kind of mentory type heroes. But also an Australian author, Tina Gephart, as well, is basically like she's my semi-mentor, I guess. She checks in on me like almost every day when I'm writing. She's an author, a rom-com author as well, and she's got heaps of books. She's totally amazing. So I look up to her as well because she's been really guiding me through the what everything means.
That's great.
I love you, Tina.
And last question, and then we will let you deal with your jet lag. Yeah. What Hogwarts house would you be in?
Guys, I've been outed. I'm not a Harry Potter person.
That's fine. Yeah, we get this a really lot. Common. I would say like a quarter of the time. I guess,
at least. Does not mean you cannot.
It makes
go in
me
a house.
Feel like a freak.
No, we get it a lot.
This is pretty standard.
Yeah.
I read the first book and I thought it was just lovely, but I mean, I think I've seen all the movies. I've gone with people to the movies. I don't know.
I think she's can't a answer Hufflepuff.
It. I was thinking maybe Ravenclaw.
Could be.
Because she wrote a book as a birthday present for a friend. Like a Hufflepuff would bake you a cake.
Pretty Ravenclaw. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll let you guys decide because I can't answer that.
These are both like gentle houses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. One is more scholarly and one is more
loyal and
nice.
Yeah.
They're all nice though.
Either one is good. Yeah. So we'll put you there. Yeah. So if people want to follow you or find out more about you online, it sounds like Twitter is the best place to do that. Maybe.
Twitter's like the place where if you want to know about like, oh, Sally just like picked a tortoise up off the road.
I
like,
want to know that.
If you want that level of detail, you can follow me on Twitter, which is Sally _Thorn. Sorry about that double underscore. It's just heinous. And then if you want top level information of like a new book is coming out, you can follow me on Facebook. And then there's various shades of information in between, and I also have like a readers group as well, which is called the Flamethrowers. Yeah. My mum named that group, which is really cute. She was just like, call it the Flamethrowers. So there's like over 3,000 people in it now, which I never anticipated anyone would join, but they all have, and they're really great. And I do like some giveaways, and I'm in there a lot. So join
and Instagram. You're going to Instagram, right?
Yeah.
You're going to become Barbara Cartland.
She's abandoning Instagram.
Instagram, me and Instagram, it's tough because I don't think in photos and it's more of a challenge for me. I'm a words person. I'm not a visual person, so it's not my go-to. But yeah, Twitter, like if you want to know that, like I didn't like my lunch today, why would anyone want to know that?
We're a horse. We get horse stuff on Twitter.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. When I've stopped being at my computer, I'm usually at my horse. So, yeah, I think it's important to find a balance between social media and writing and the real world. So, yeah. Okay.
Well, thank you for taking the time out of your jet lagged, very busy schedule.
I hope I did okay. Thank you, guys.
You did wonderfully.